Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. The date today is January the 30th, 2013. Our topic for today is going to be the hissy fit, conquering the temper tantrum. Yeah, that's right. Today, we're actually going to take a listener call in, and they want to know a little bit about what do you do with a kiddo who's throwing a hissy fit. I thought it was, first off, a great terminology. I haven't gotten to use the word hissy fit in so long. I loved it. But also, I think it's a great question. I think it's a question that every single one of us deal with. I had somebody ask me a while back, Trey, do you deal with it? And I was like, that was kind of a shocking question. It was like, do you, you know, fart or something? He was like, well, yeah, of course. Yes, absolutely. We deal with this a lot. You know, we've dealt with each one of our kids for a short period of time. And we're going to talk a little bit today about how do you conquer that little monster. And I don't mean the kid, but I mean that behavior that we don't necessarily like very much in a way that's efficient and quick. Because no parent likes it. Let me phrase that. I've never met a parent that liked it up until this point. Not the one that was sane and, you know, not, you know, schizophrenic or something. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Before we get into that, let's get into our intro for today. Got a little housekeeping for you guys. If you guys want to get notified of any new episodes that are coming out. In other words, three of these go out a week. You want to know what we talked about in the week, but you don't necessarily want to have to jump over to the site. You just want to know real quick. If you sign up for that, you put your name and your email address in, you will get a notification saying, hey, here's what we talked about today. Come check it out. So it's one of those that if you need to get check it out right now, you're like, oh, man, I needed to hear that last week about hissy fits. Boom. You'd have had it in your email. You'd have known to listen to it that day, play it in the car on the way to work, etc. We put those out tonight and nice and early just for you guys. So go check that out, guys. If you do, you will also get a copy of my ebook, The Lost Art of Parenting, The Art of Praise. So you definitely want to get that. It is one of my favorite books. It's one of the books that if I could only pick one for you to read, it's the one I'd pick for you to read. So go check that one out. It's very powerful. Guys, also, go like us on Facebook, share us, all that other good stuff. Man, I tell you, that is so important and so helpful when you just share the episode out and say, man, I love today, I was having this problem, and Trey really got this squared away for us. And that kind of thing will go way further than me saying a single word or paying any money to have something, you know, promoted. You guys are where it really happens. So consider sharing us out, guys. Hit that little Facebook button up there. Drag us over. Let people know about us. Send people our way. And, guys, don't even forget about just the average word-of-mouth referral. Man, kids are, you know, having, oh, man, I know this one guy named Trey. He's over at the Family Podcast Network. And he is just great, man. Or if you're saying, oh, man, that's kind of long, Trey, you can also do The Family Podcast now. We've got that as well. That'll also direct him to the site here as well. So send him on over. People just take it better when you do it. Guys, also don't forget to check out our blog at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com/blog, where my wife writes the most incredible pieces that we talk about every one of them, and I still go read them myself just because I think they're that good. They're entertaining, they're fun, and spot on. So also don't forget to go check that out. Guys, also, if you want to support the show, if you feel like you get 3 dimes out of every single episode, that's right, if you feel like 30 cents is at minimum what you're getting out of this show, you can actually support the show at 30 cents per episode. You can do that on a monthly basis. We do a $5 recurring charge. It will just, you know, again, $5 coming out. I mean, what is that? That's a Starbucks coffee, depending on what you get. Right there, you'd be amazingly surprised how when I get enough of you guys doing that, you say, how could that really support a business? If I get enough of you guys doing that, I'm telling you, that runs a business for reals. So consider doing that. You can also do a year-long membership and save 13% of that. Support us again, PTacker, great thing that you can do for us. Guys, also, if you have any questions, comments, topics, encouragement that you want to drop us, we want to connect with you, and I have given you guys butt tons of ways to do that. You can do that through an email, TreyGibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. I am responding to every single email. Some of you guys are having a little time before you can get to them because we're getting backlogged on the emails and the stuff that I've got to do for maintenance on the site, but we're getting them out there, and we're getting them back to you. Guys, you can also leave an internet voicemail. Right now, that's my preferred way. If you put an internet voicemail out, it is likely you're going to get on the show with your question, and it's likely that you're going to get it done within the next 2 to 3 to 5 days. Not making any promises with that, but you're more likely to get it done than in emails. And the reality is that I set scripted times that I go check my emails, and that's typically once a week. on Monday mornings is typically the very first day that I'll do it. So you send me an email on Wednesday, you may not hear from me again until Monday. You send one on Tuesday, you won't hear me. But you leave the internet voicemail on Tuesday, it is likely you will make it into the show the next day. So consider leaving that internet voicemail. We're going to have a caller who's actually, this is their second time to call in. They've been fantastic about that. So thank you to you again, Mark, for making that call in. But that's one of the best ways to do it, because it helps me out, and then I can flip it and turn around into a show real easy. One of the best things that you can do. Guys, also, you can contact me by phone. Same principle as the internet voicemail, but you can do it. Call me 661-PARENT and the number 0661-PARENT-0. If you're out and about driving around, you have that same question, you're not sitting in front of that computer to leave that internet voicemail, pop on over, let us know what you've got to say, and we'll follow up with you, maybe put that on the show as well. You can also go to the Contact Us page on the website, thehumanpodcastnetwork.com/contact us, and you can leave a topic suggestion, you can leave feedback, all that other good stuff. And guys, if you just want to plain out, flat out, encourage us. Every time, we have had just some super kind statements on Facebook lately, especially about the unschooling podcast. I've had a lot of feedback on that, internet and Facebook and otherwise. Man, I tell you, thank you guys so much for that. It's just good to know you're not the only person out there like-minded in this, and it's reassuring. We've definitely got a community we can build around, even just the idea of unschooling. So get hooked up, guys. Let's touch base. And then you can also do it through Facebook, guys. I'm a big Facebooker. I check Facebook a lot during the day. And even in reality, sometimes you're even better with that. When it's long, detailed responses, more often than what I'm not, I'm going to do is I'm going to jot it down, use it as a topic suggestion, make an entire podcast. Because if you're asking that question, I'll guarantee you somebody else will be as well. A podcast is going to go a lot further to help you guys get your answer. So consider doing that as well. All right, guys, with all of the housekeeping out of the way, let's get into the show. I'm really excited about today. Today's topic, again, is hissy fit, conquering the temper tantrum. I think this is a vital one. Because in reality, the temper tantrum happens to everybody. So, you know, it's a nasty little booger. It plagues all of us. We've all bumped into it in some, you know, way or form. And inevitably, it seems to happen where? In flipping Walmart or something. Ah! You know, it's that one place where you just know. You just know. Everybody's looking at you like, oh my God, he's a bad dad. You know, and nobody is. Some people are, but most of them are just like, I'm sorry, man. It happened to me last week. You know, but this is a nasty little booger, and often we're very unsure how to fix this. And we often question and wonder, is there a way to fix that? And the answer is absolutely yes. But before we get into that, guys, let's go ahead and play the listener call real quick just to kind of hear the background on it.
Trey, this is Mark. I called you a couple weeks ago, I guess it was, and I have a question for you. Our 3-year-old, when we go to put her in timeout or ask her to do something that she doesn't want to do, throws a complete hissy fit, a complete temper tantrum, kicks the wall, you know, hits the wall, throws herself down on the floor being limp. I think she got my temper. My 23-month-old is the same way. He has just as big a temper. So how do we change this? I mean, we've been trying to explain to them, like you said, okay, this is not the way we act, but she gets such a temper that it's like it goes right in one ear and out the other. She's not even listening. So if you could give me some feedback on that, either email or, I mean, if you're answered online, that's fine, but something, please. Need some help. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work, and God bless.
You know, see, this is a good question, and truthfully, Mark, you're hitting on something here that's actually pretty insightful of you that you're picking up on. You know, the reality is this. Temper tantrums are multifaceted. What we're going to do is we're going to break down a little bit about what the temper tantrum is, because I think it's vital for parents to understand where a temper tantrum comes from, because I think a lot of times kids get misunderstood when it comes to the ever classic temper tantrum. So again, I wanted to play this for you guys just so we can all kind of get this idea. There's a connection that we can all make with this, you know, understanding that this kind of thing happens, that it is a reality. And, you know, we've seen it in every one of our kids, truthfully. Now, I will be honest, we didn't see it for long. And I started studying the temper tantrum well before we had kids, because I was a counseling psychology major with emphasis in family studies, and that's what I did. And so, you know, I began to realize that, you know, what was going on here, because I had no clue how to do that. I had no clue how to handle a temper tantrum. And so we started doing a little bit of research, and we played around with what we thought might work and what didn't work. And we had a really good system put together before my oldest was 2 years old. And let me tell you, one of the best things we ever did was we studied and put this together. Saved us a lot of pulled out hair and ready to punch kids and whatever and those kinds of things. But so let's talk a little bit about where does the tantrum come from. So let's think about just kind of developmentally what's going on here, right? So up until this point, how have our infants communicated to this point, right? I mean, it's a simple formula, right? Anytime our kids are uncomfortable, what do? They cry, right? They throw a little bit of a crying fit, right? So if the baby's diaper is dirty and it's getting uncomfortable, maybe it's chafing or making a diaper rash or something like that, it gets uncomfortable. So what do they do to get our attention? They cry. So if they're hungry and they need to eat and they haven't eaten in a long time and they start to get uncomfortable, what do? They cry. If they're feeling some level of experiential pain and they don't know what to do or how to make it stop, what do? They cry. I mean, you see how that works? I mean, the reality is that this idea of blowing up and throwing a fit is pretty common up to him this point. And it's one of those things that, I mean, in reality, we don't question this. You know, we accept it as kind of an innate thing that happens in a kid. Now, before some of you guys shut me down and think, oh, is he saying that, you know, as kids get older, it's just normal for them to whine? No, that's not what I'm saying. There does come that point where we've got to start transitioning into something different, but we'll cover that here in a little bit. But the reality is this. Kids throw fits when they're young to get everything that they need. It's just what they do. It's a crying fit. Now, I'm not suggesting that if your little bitty kids or like your infants and whatnot and your newborns are crying that they are quote-unquote throwing a fit. I mean, you got to see it this way. It is them trying to communicate with the only language that comes built in with them. I mean, that's just babies. Babies just cry. When they come out, that's just what they do. They cry to get what they need. It's not about manipulation. Oh, my God, I've had parents try to convince me that their infants are trying to manipulate them. Oh, they know. They know what they're doing. It's untrue. Kids are only trying to get their necessary wants and needs. And that's the only way they know how to do it. It's the only way they can do it when they're little. Now, as they get older, and you would be surprised, we have taught sign language to every single one of our kids by 6 to 7 months and earlier in some cases. But on average, 6 to 7 months. Yes, my 7-year-old daughter, Charlotte, right now can look at mama and sign milk and then start getting breastfed. I mean, I'm telling you guys, it works. It's nuts. It's crazy. Some have asked me, well, why is that? Because the speech centers of the brain develop later than the hand-eye coordination centers of the brain. That's just the simple fact to it. So kids really can communicate when they're little, when they're littler. But the reality is that verbal communication takes much later into the game. So once again, I want to go over this. It's normal for kids to want to cry to get what they want. Now, we all acknowledge that there comes this age that we expect kids to behave differently. We all acknowledge that there reaches that point where the kid cannot continue to throw huge temper tantrums to get what they want. They can't continue to throw these big giant fits to get what they want. And that rightly so. I mean, that's the right thinking. We want to wean that out of our kids because we don't want our kids growing up to be full-grown adults learning if they stomp their feet, flip around, and go limp on us that they can get what they want. We need to work that behavior out of their repertoire, right? We've got to give them alternative ways that they can learn to cope with their disappointment, with their frustrations, with their hurts or whatever else in such a way where they're not, you know, throwing these little temper tantrums. I mean, I get that. And I mean, let's be honest. Although I made the comment that adults are not allowed to throw these fits, let's be honest, sometimes they do. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit as well. But a lot of times parents throw these fits. I tell you, I was watching a mom the other day. And I tell you, Walmart, man, let me tell you, as a psychologist, a counseling psychologist with emphasis in family, Walmart is like it is just the dream place when it comes to watching behaviors. And I watched a mom sit there as this kid was like, no, mom, I want a toy. I want a toy. I want a toy. And that mom looked at that little kid. Her eyes got huge. I thought she was about to eat her child. And she just looked at that little boy and went, you're going to stop asking for that toy. I mean, I was flashing back to Poltergeist. I'm thinking her head's going to turn around or some clown is going to come around this corner and start talking to us. I mean, I was freaked out. I thought she's going to eat this child. And I stepped and I thought to myself, does she not realize what she just did? It's the classic, don't yell! You know what I mean? She told a kid not to throw a fit, through throwing a fit. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in just a minute. But the reality is that though these kids are doing what they've always done, they've reached this age that eventually we start wanting different results from them. We want them to stop whining. We want them to stop, you know, throwing these temper tantrums to get what they want. And that's not a problem. That's a good thing. Not only is it, it's our sanity, but even more importantly, it's about our kids need to learn. They need to learn how to do things differently. We need to discipline them, right? Which means to disciple and to teach them and show them different ways of handling things other than the ways that they've always done it innately since they've been born. So when we begin to work with our kids, often as we're showing them these new things, there's often a latency period, kind of like a transition time that they go through. And so in a lot of cases, the answer to all of this is it just takes a little bit of time. Sometimes it just takes being a little bit persistent. But on the flip side, I do acknowledge that sometimes, even when we understand this, some of these habits persist. So let's talk real quick when it comes to our temper tantrums. What are we really seeing? There's three primary things that I see that most of these get categorized into when it comes to what is our kid wanting from us. Again, remember, all behaviors are trying to tell us something, okay? We've just got to figure out what it is. So in reality, what are we seeing from our kids when they're throwing these temper tantrums? Number one, kids began to realize that their old ways are not going to work anymore, right? Kids who have always cried and thrown fits to get what they want, who were able to throw, you know, the cry up, and then they, you know, their needs were met, well, not in an unhealthy way, it's just what they did. All of a sudden, they're in a stage now where they're learning that these aren't going to work anymore. Now, I'm saying this because I want you guys to hear me, is that not always is it about pushing buttons. I think automatically a lot of parents jump to the mentality that, oh, they must be doing this to make me mad. Contrary to most opinion, most kids aren't trying to make you mad until later in their teens. In most cases, your kid wants to please you, or if nothing else, they want your attention. And sometimes they realize that the only way they can get that attention from you is when they screw it up. Okay? But they're reaching this point now, right, where the old ways, the things that they've done in the past, they're not working for them anymore. What are they, in essence, actually doing? They're just trying to communicate to you in their old language, right? They're just trying to get across from you, to you, what they want through the old language that they had always done it through. You see, old habits die hard in kids too. Second thing, what are we seeing when we often see these type of temper tantrums? Often we're seeing a mirror. It's kind of the classic in a glass darkly. In a lot of cases, we're seeing our reactions parroted back to us. Now, you see, parents don't like this, because this one takes self-ownership in this issue. That this is not just an issue of a kid being a defiant little fart, or it's not just an issue of a kid just wanting to blow up to get the toy that they want. All of a sudden, we have to start asking ourselves, are we teaching our kids to be this way? And I'm going to tell you guys this, you absolutely can be teaching it even when you don't mean to. A while back, I was sitting there, and my son was working on something, and I came in, I said, son, you need to stop working on that, Anna, because he was trying to take the batteries out of the controller. This was probably about a year ago, so he wasn't nearly as adroit when it came to this battery changing process. And I said, you need to put that down. He looked at me, and he said, no. And I told him, I said, Grant, you need to take that down. The next thing I know, that little boy had his arms crossed. His chest was just all puffed up. Oh, I can fight you. And he stuck that little chin out. And let me tell you, at this point, what is Daddy doing? Daddy's about ready to grab Thor's hammer and come down on this kid. I was ready to tear me up some chitlin. And I stopped myself and I looked down. Guess what my body was doing? I had my arms crossed. I had my chest puffed up. My chin was sticking out. What was my son doing? Only exactly what he saw his father doing. You see, this is the hardest part of great parenting. We talk a lot about, you know, there's a difference between good parenting. The number one enemy to being a great parent is not a bad parent. It's not. The number one enemy to being a great parent is just being a good one. There's a lot of parents that have chosen to take the mediocrity out of, you know, or push the mediocrity into their parenting and just kind of hit right there in the middle. That's not for me. Maybe that works for some folks. That is not for me and my family. And truthfully, I think this is one of the best keys to unlocking moving from that good parent to the great parent, is that ability to admit to yourself, crap, I taught him that. I taught him that. So in a lot of cases, when our kids are throwing these temper tantrums, they're doing nothing but what they have seen. I think we often like to say, well, I don't have temper tantrums like that. I don't stomp the floor and collapse on myself and whine. I mean, I don't do that. But if you really look carefully, you will often see that we throw adult fits all the time. My wife walked in the other day and said, hey, would you be willing to do the dishes? And I'm a big dish doer. I mean, I'm a very domestic man. I love helping my wife around the house. Happy wife equals happy husband. And I don't mean that like, she's going to be mad at me. I don't mean it that way. But happy wife equals happy husband, so I'm always doing dishes. And the other day she came in and she goes, you want to do the dishes? And I was like, God, no, I just got home, and I blah, 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 and I blee, 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 blee. And you know what I realized? I just threw an adult fit. I just threw an adult fit at my wife. And yet I sit here and sometimes have the gall and audacity to wonder, where do my kids get this crap from? That's nuts. It's me. Very powerful thing you can do is learn to acknowledge the mirror that you often are seeing in your kid. And then number three, what are we often seeing is that we're feeding it somehow. Remember, like we said earlier, all behaviors serve a purpose. And if we can just figure out what that purpose is, we can help the kids get to the solutions they're looking for without having to do things like burn a relationship through whining, etc. Now, often, behaviors persist when they get fed. And we don't even realize that we're doing it sometimes. Because I'm going to tell you guys this. Listen carefully. This is one of Trey's nuggets of wisdom right here that's very, very impactful. Whatever behaviors that we notice get fed. Let me say that one more time. Whatever behaviors that we notice, that we pay attention to, that we give attention with, that we say something about, it gets fed. A while back, we had the kids go clean the room. We had a stint there where we were having heck in a handbag and getting kids to clean room. I mean, we were just like, I don't know what to do. We're just ready to start throwing toys away. And we just don't even touch spanking. We were to get to that point where we're like, I'm ready to whoop their butts, man. This is getting so bad. I'm really tired of this. And so we were sitting there talking about this. And finally, I sat down, started a little bit of thinking, how are we going to get this fixed? So we sat, I came in there, and the kids were just kind of farting around, because it got to where, like, we would say, okay, kids, you want to clean your room? Then we go, and we come back, and they hadn't worked on it. You guys, you need to clean your room. We'd go, and they'd come back, and, you know, they hadn't worked on stuff. We would do it, I mean, literally all day long. So finally, I realized that what I was doing was, I was only popping my head in when they were doing something wrong. When they weren't getting what I needed them to do. All the attention that they would get was rotated around them sitting there not doing anything. You see what happened there? I was feeding one of those behaviors, and it was the one that I didn't want to see anymore. It was my fault. You see, behaviors are like animals, guys. Behaviors are like animals. Whichever one that you feed the most often is the one who survives. It's just the reality to it. Even the spindly little behaviors we don't want anymore. If you don't feed it, it doesn't happen. So in reality, you guys have actually, like within those three that we just talked about, what are we seeing when it comes to this? Lies the three top answers to most of the issues that parents are having when it comes to these hissy fits. So let's talk real quick about the solutions. We're going to wrap it up. Make this a little bit of a shorter show today, because I really want you guys to chew on this. So let's talk about solutions. Number one, be empathic. Remember, again, it's just what kids do when they're little. The goal of the parent is actually to help them wean that out of their system. And in a lot of ways, what a lot of parents are just crucifying their kids for are actually issues that we on our end as parents, we're not helping them rectify. We're not teaching them how to do better with it. Guys, I am guilty of this as anybody else. I get so upset with my kid because they're not acting the way I want them to act, and yet I've never actually stopped to teach them how. Ouch. not designed to be mean or hurtful, but ouch. So we need to be very empathic with them and just understand that kids do goofy, dumb things. Kids throw little temper tantrums and go hissy fitty sometimes. And we need to be willing to accept that. I'm not saying you let it off the hook. I'm not saying that there's not consequences for it. Of course, you need to be in all of those cases if we want to see it disappear. However, it is a part of being a kid. Next off, another one of my favorites is, you need to find, like a witch hunt, guys. Pretend it is a witch hunt or a 1970s communist scare, whatever it is. You need to make like a witch hunt. And you need to figure out where you are doing similar things as well. Remember, we talked about number two being the mirror, right? Kids do what they see. So you need to spend the majority of your time figuring out how to fix it yourself, because you will be surprised where we teach these things. And it's not a big deal. It's not about being humbling or anything else like that. It's just finally making us go, wow, I'm doing this. No wonder they're having a hard time getting over that. They're doing exactly what they've seen me do. And there's a power, an inherent power that happens when we acknowledge that. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with your kids. We screw up, guys. We screw up. It's a part of it. I'm not saying it's nice or comfortable or even something I'm wanting to hear people do on a regular basis, but we do it. Also, don't be afraid to get recruit your spouse to kind of check it out and see what's going on. What are you doing that's causing this? A lot of times spouses have a unique availability to look at that and figure that out. So recruit spouses in there and get them helping you understand what's going on and how what are you doing that is teaching it to your kids, and then get it out of there. And then last, number three, starve it. Starve it. Remember, number three in the what are we seeing is feeding it. So what do you need to do? You got to starve it. You got to starve that behavior out. You want to make sure that you give very little attention to the poor behavior. You need to make sure that they get minimal what they need to get them squared away, whether it's timeout or whatever else, but they don't need to get a drop, lick, or iota of extra attention past that. This is not to punish them. This is not to make them uncomfortable. This is not to make them pay. This is about making sure that our kids are getting way more attention for doing it right than they're doing it wrong. Now, let's say they get it right. Let's say they give us the good behavior. You need to praise the crap ton out of them, okay? You need to make sure that they understand that they did it right and that you're so proud of them, that you really appreciate it and all that other stuff. Your kid needs to feel really good after they do it right. When they don't throw a fit, when they don't throw a hissy, when they do take it well, good job for not throwing a fit. I'm so impressed. We just got that through our son. My son's a very emotional kid. And when he doesn't get something, there was a while there he would just cry for everything. Even at 3.5, almost 4 years old, he cried for everything. He'd get upset because he didn't get something, he'd start crying. My job as a parent is to teach him how to handle those disappointments effectively. So remember, we're starving it. Another part of the starving it is ignore it. Ignore it when you can. Ignore as much as you can when you can. You see, the issue is the large part about what your kid is doing, it's about getting a reaction from you. They're trying to elicit that response from you. And every time that you focus in, every time that you let them have it, they get exactly what they were looking for. That response, that reaction, that piece of us, that attention, the eye looks, the scolding, the snarky remarks. Yes, your kid would rather hear you gripe at them for whatever it is they're doing, whether it be kicking a wall. And Mark, I'm not saying that's necessarily what you guys are doing. I don't know. But they would rather get fussed at for kicking a wall or screaming at mom and dad or slamming doors or stomping off. They would rather do that than not hear anything from us at all. You have to just praise the junk ton out of them when you see them doing it right. You ignore what you can. Now, I want to make sure that I'm clear. Mark, I think you're right. We can't ignore wall kicking because that's damage of property. That's y'all's property, and nobody deserves to have her property destroyed without our permission. And so I do absolutely recommend that you put stops to that. You do absolutely, and again, this is more generalized for everybody, but you know, if they're hurting someone else, you absolutely stop that. If somebody is hurting somebody else, that is violating the civil right for every man to have life, liberty, and freedom and pursuit of happiness. That's that life right to feel safe. That is a part of it. We never let our kids hurt others, even in hissy fits. Next thing is when it comes to ignoring it, don't react, don't talk, don't chide, because automatically anytime you do those things, it gives attention. I have seen more parents struggle with this than not. They want to react, they want to fight, they want to dicker, they want to chide. Well, you should have known better than to mess with the cookie jar, right? I mean, we just that's just all that they want to do. It doesn't get you anywhere. Next off, you might need to put them back in timeout. We'll go into this more in detail here on the last page of my notes, but in some cases, it may be that your kid gets up and gets out. What do? You physically get them back up, you pick them up, and you put them back in timeout. If they flip out and throw fits and swing and swim and kick, you take them kicking and screaming, and you stick them back in the chair. Remember, you do all of this firmly. Not hard, not mean, not vindictive, not, you're going to sit there, dang it. It just needs to be very, hey, I understand you're upset. You've got to sit here, baby girl. Hey, I'm sorry you're upset, son, but you gotta sit here. That's just the way it is. And then you take them and you physically put them back in the timeout. Remember, no talking. Once they start throwing that fit, once they start kicking that wall, once they start slamming themselves around, once they start throwing that toys, you get up, you walk over, you pick them back up, and you stick them back in that timeout. And you do it over and over and over and over. Then once they're calm, then you praise the snot out of them for being calm again. Remember, the goal is not to make them uncomfortable and hate throwing the temper tantrum. It's to make doing it right and being calm and being level-headed is what we want from them. We want to praise the snot out of that. Now, I want to make sure that I issue out a disclaimer here. Time out, listen to me carefully. Time out is not a punishment. Time out is not a punishment. Do y'all need to repeat after me? It's okay if you need to. Time out is not a punishment. Too many parents treat time out as the way, well, if you're going to do this, then I'm going to go stick it here. And that turns into power struggles. Time out is not about punishment. Time out is about teaching our kids what we want from them, laser targeted, explaining to them exactly what we need, and teaching them that. Now, sometimes that might be an uncomfortable lesson. So talking about this caller situation, what Mark phoned in about when it comes to his kiddo throwing a fit. Let's talk a little bit about this. I think you're doing it right. The timeout is a good thing. People do on timeouts. In most cases, it's the people that do on timeout are those that don't do it correctly. So let's talk real quick what timeout needs to look like. You need to have a chair, or I've had one family a while back who did a carpet square, or just a spot in your floor where the kid sits down, and that's where they have to go for timeout. Timeout, again, is not about punishing our kids or making things stink for them or trying to make things awkward and uncomfortable for them. The purpose of time out is to help them cool off and get back in the game and think about new ways we can do it different next time. So you might have a chair or a carpet or spot. You want to make sure that that's in a boring place. There's not things that they can look at and play with and fidget with and interact with. Because the idea is we need the emotions to be there and to slowly trickle away as they think on those things. You want to make sure that you're able to see your kid at all times. You never want them to be out of your sight. I had a dad a while back who said, Trey, I was using timeout, and it was working amazingly. They would just go, and they would obey. And I realized one day that he was in there, sitting there playing on his games the whole time. So you absolutely need to make sure that you can see them. You need to make sure that you have a bland wall. And remember, there's nothing to touch around them. Nothing that they can play with. Nothing they can grab and pull on top of them like a bookshelf or anything like that. It just needs to be boring. It needs to be calm as possible. If they begin to throw a fit, throw themselves down, kick and squirm, kick stuff, bang stuff, throw stuff around, hit little brother and sister, what do? You very gently and yet very firmly move them back to their timeout. Move them back to timeout. Listen to me, guys. Here's the most important part. You need to be completely calm. This is not a power struggle. You're in charge. Trust me, you've got more physical power than they do. But don't use it that way. If they throw the temper tantrum in the fit, you pick them up, you take them back, and you sit them back down in their place, in their little beds, wherever it is you keep them. But you need to be completely calm whenever you do it. No fussing at them, no griping, no gritching, no lecturing. That makes us feel better. It does not make a kid feel better. No chiding them for what they did. You just stay completely calm. I'm telling you, that's the best way you can do it. Don't make eye contact with them, because that can be reinforcing. You just gently guide them, or maybe you carry them if they go limp on you, and you stick them back in their chair, or you stick them back in their spot. Whatever it is that you need to do. You put them in the timeout, guys. Set a timer. Don't forget about it. Let them have something definitive that they can count down with. Set a timer for them. I recommend 1 minute for every year of their age. So if they're 3 years old, like Mark mentioned, you got a three-year-old kid, that kid only needs three minutes in timeout. Kids under 2 years old, don't do it. That part of the brain that helps them connect cause and effect is often not developed where adults are, and they don't necessarily understand what we're saying. So set that timer. Whenever you do, let them say, you may get up after this timer goes off. Then you go back to work, right? So if they're, again, you need to make sure that you can see them at all times, but you go back to work. Anytime you spent lecturing or fussing or griping, there's nothing for them but go, ooh, look, I get attention when. Next off, exhaust your time. Run that timer out, right? At 1 minute for every age of their life. You exhaust that time. If they get up out of their chairs, you walk over, you gently and firmly pick them up and stick them back in the chair. They get up again, you go, and you firmly pick them up and set them back in the chair. You see a habit here? I had a mom who was trying to get her kid to stay in his timeout, and she told me, she said, Trey, I stopped counting at 80 times. He got up out of that chair. And she said it was probably well over 100 before they finally stopped doing that. But guess what happened when he finally realized? Mama wasn't joking. Sometimes you may have to do that. Ask them if they understand why they were in timeout. You would be surprised at how often I've told my kids, you know, go to timeout for this. And I say, do you understand why you were in timeout? And they say, it's because you said that. And I'm like, oh, no. That's good, but that's not what I meant at all. It's because of this. Ask them if they understand why they are in there. Kids want to know. They want to know why you're in there. They want to know why their brothers and sisters are in there as well. And then last, that nasty little word, you got to be consistent. This is hard, but you got to be consistent. You got to do it every day when it's convenient, when it's inconvenient, when you're feeling good, when you're feeling bad, etc. You got to practice this stuff, and you got to practice it consistently. Well, guys, that wraps up this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Don't forget, guys, we really want to value your time while you're here. So if you will, jump on over, give us an email, internet voicemail, phone, whatever else. Let us know what you want to hear. Do you have any questions or comments, a topic you want to hear us go over, or anything like that, or just shoot us a little bit of encouragement. We love it. Hey, I hope you guys have a great week. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys this Friday, the Real Family Guys podcast. We're going to talk about good grief. Oh, yeah.